Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
So if this was the Belmont, he could maybe run, but not 2 weeks with the Preakness, right?
Correct.
No. Okay. Yeah. I wasn't aware of that. I sort of thought that they would face off in the Preakness, that would be fun. All right.
No. Forte is also under some suspicions of drug use back from when he was a two-year-old. He actually was. There's a case against him. It hasn't been ruled on yet, which is suspicious in and of itself.
I love when you say he's suspected of drug use, like he's sitting with the other horses in the barn and they have cocaine.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
All righty then. So I had my high school weekend over the weekend. I went out to Delaware with my high school friends from George W. Hewlett High School.
What'd you guys break this year?
We didn't break anything. Well, a toilet seat.
Well, normally we find about the closets months later.
A toilet seat was broken.
To be fair.
In Michael Kerr's room, a toilet seat was broken.
Don't name names.
And he brought it out and he said, the toilet seat is broken. I said, there's a lot of bathrooms in this house and we'll get it fixed. And we got it fixed. Indeed, we got it fixed. So it's Michael Kerr and Eddie Plutzer and Stephen Pearsall and myself. And we played golf for 3 days. And then I came back and played golf yesterday because I couldn't believe I'd be this bad with my normal set of clubs. I have a set of clubs out in Delaware, and I have a set of clubs here. And in my last day in Delaware, I lost the most money. I lost $75. We play 5-5-5 for three rounds. I lost $75, which is the maximum you can lose, $105. I lost close to the max. It's never happened to me before. I used to win. Not win big, but win $10 or something like that. Sure. Never lost. If I lost, I lost $20. Pearsall lost all the time. So I kept $100 of Pearsall's, and I've had it for 10 years in my house. And it says Property of Gooch, his nickname, $100. It was from 2012 or something like that. And I dipped into it to pay. I dipped into my legitimate winnings to pay my legitimate losings. Okay, I dipped into it. On the last day, I shot 57 on the back. This is terrible. This is absolutely terrible.
Water does come into play.
57. I couldn't make a single chip shot. I couldn't make a swing. I was terrible on the back. I was 45-57. It's 102. 45 is fine. Totally fine. Yesterday, I was 45 or 46 on the front. It's at Columbia. It's a shorter course because I play from the gold tees. And I shot 54 on the back. That's six per hole. I shot 54.
Are you posting these scores?
Yeah.
What's your handicap now?
It's got to be 50. I'm terrible now, and I don't understand it. I started out yesterday, and nobody really wants to hear about somebody else's golf game, but I started out bogey, 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 par. That's fine. And then I just totally collapsed. I'm really terrible, and it's concerning to me because it's the only thing I like to do.
Yeah.
Is to play golf. And it's terrible. We had a lovely weekend. I will say that we do the same thing all the time. We go to, and everyone has the same response when they do this in their lives. If you go to a great butcher shop, if you get great meat and chicken right in front of you, and you watch them cut it, and you watch them prepare it, and you grill it, or you put it in an oven, and it's great. You say the following sentence. God, I wish I had something like this near me.
Same thing for a seafood market.
Yeah.
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 And part of it's just the show of as they're presenting it to you and they're telling you the story. Here's where it came from. Here's how you're going to prep it. Rub this on right before you put it on the grill.
And all of that is true. And you know the place I'm talking about in Rehoboth. Hickman's Meat Market.
Yes. Family butcher shop.
Yes. For years and years and years.
Wear the scars to show it.
Well, that's right. Because you're using tough knives, and you're missing every once in a while, and you're landing on your own hands, your arms. They do something for us every single year, and I call up, and they know the order. They know the order. And there's a tenderloin, and they, in front of you, they prepare the tenderloin. And with those things that they cut away from the tenderloin, they grind them up into hamburgers. They're the greatest hamburgers in the history of mankind. They're just the greatest. They're fabulous. So we sat, we chatted, and we played, and we had a wonderful time, and we're old, so we don't have the strength or the stamina to play as many holes as we used to, but we really had a wonderful, wonderful time. The first 2 days, the weather was great. The last day, there was a threat of rain, and it wasn't great, but we got 18 in, you know, without significant spotty rain, and it was just wonderful. Driving home was dreadful for me. As I'm driving home, I don't know, I started about 2:30 on Saturday, and everything was, it was a terrible rainstorm. Like by the time, if you know this geography at all, by the time I hit Route 50 in Maryland to get to the Bay Bridge, it was a total downpour all the way through crossing the Bay Bridge. Then it got a little bit better. But when I got to the Beltway, it was just, you're not moving. That's it. Everybody was out on the road. Everybody's out on the run tonight. There's no place left to hide. And so it took me a trip that most of the time takes right around 3 hours. It took about 3:45. But, you know, it's okay. You know, that was okay. I had a lovely weekend. I was really look forward to it. And then in August, we'll do it up at Michael's house in north of about 60 or 70 miles north of New York City. And
be careful with the toilet.
Well, I think his toilets are probably better than my toilets.
You know, it could be a revenge situation.
Yeah. Well, then I would be the aggressor at that point, and I would take a toilet and deliberately break it and burn it in front of everybody.
Hey, wrong is unredressed.
And then Michael came over yesterday with Liz and the boys. Because the boys are like nervous about the dog, but Jesse was at the farm yesterday. Jesse's coming back today, for which I'm grateful because I love my dog. But Michael, I want you to explain what you did with the planter.
So for this season, we went online and we ordered two wooden planters, about four feet long, probably a foot and a half, almost 2 feet deep in terms of the planting area.
So?
Probably a foot and a half. Mm-hmm. And these are elevated. I went for the higher end one that has a little tray. Hey,
who's kidding who?
Okay, I ordered it. I did the research.
Yeah, okay,
and it's amazing. When I got you your first one already 3 years ago,
it's great.
There were 6 week delays to get any of these types of planters. These came right. I had them delivered to the front door here. Mom somehow carried both of them inside. Each is about 35 pounds.
That's by carry, you mean she kicked them and pushed them?
Yeah, probably. You know, I was noticing a couple of dings. Yeah. And so our Mother's Day was uneventful. And then I was like, Liz, I think I can knock these out in probably a half hour. She's laughing. So I'm like, I'll take all three kids. I buckle all three boys into the car seats. I get my little Black & Decker screwdriver, drill set, come over, open the box, take everything out, and start to realize there's a lot of pieces here.
There's really a lot of pieces, and there's a lot of hardware to the pieces, too. There's
and everything
a lot of
is labeled. I would
stuff.
Say there's
labeled
always,
with letters.
There's yes,
A, B,
letters,
C, D, E.
And that's going to correspond to where you are in the instructions, and it tells you of letter B, of screw B, you're going to have, you know, eight of these available.
I could not even, looking at it, I could... It was unfathomable to me the how anyone could put this together, and I was, of course, immediately ready to just call the worker man who put these things together. How much money
it's
do you want?
It's one of those, if you've ever built anything from IKEA, and the best way to test a relationship is to travel through IKEA, and not in like a 500 Days of Summer cute sort of, montage, but no, to get something from IKEA, to navigate how to go through the warehouse and build it yourselves. And if you survive that
build
long
it yourself.
Day, you're good to go.
It's wood. Mm. It's
so
metal.
You,
build it yourself.
You watch me. The first couple pieces, easy. Put, you know, the side wall into the leg posts. And it's, you know, don't tighten these fully. You're like, okay, this is going to have a little bit
I
of...
I didn't say anything.
A little bit of buckle. Then it starts to... You have to put the lower slats...
And they fall
into
through.
The position. And every time I tried to flip it over, it was like dominoes. It would just fall out.
Through.
And
fall
Dad
through.
Just... You kept getting closer and closer to you just over my shoulder. And then without any prompt, you started to just place a hand... On these
to help
on
you.
These lower planks
to help you to push the thing together to help you. Yes, he threw me out of my own backyard,
and then I just see you please staring at me, cycling through every 5 to 10 minutes to see where I was.
I'm amazed anyone can build anything.
Sure,
because I can't build anything. I've said this many, many times. My parents used to get me model planes to build. All I could do was put the decals on. That's it. Right. I couldn't do, I didn't, conceptually, I don't understand how any of it works. I'm grateful when it works, but I don't know how it works. And because I'm who I am, I never felt the need to learn these things. No. I can talk for a living. I can't build anything. What do I have to build it for? If I can talk and make enough money, I'll pay you. You build it. That's the way the world works.
So you threw me out. I did build it. I threw you out.
You
Finally, Liz comes out and goes, come on, man, where are we? It's Mother's Day.
He built one of them. It looks great. It looks great. The second one will go fast.
The second one will go faster. So I turn this over, and Liz goes, "Are we almost done?" And I go, "Yeah, I just have to put the lower tray on." Beautiful slatted pieces. She looks to her left and sees 56 little screws that have to go in one by one.
Yeah, just a quick couple of hours to do this.
So I'm assuming.
But my drill,
The drill was great. The drill was great. I'm assuming that whatever it costs less when you build it yourself.
Oh, sure.
I mean, this probably, if it was pre-built for you, would probably cost double what it cost, right?
Well, think about just the shipping alone. They always do interesting stories with IKEA as they try and revolutionize some of their longstanding pieces, and they come back to the flat pack, which is if you can take that bookshelf that everyone had through college in their early 20s, if you can figure out a way to make it easier to send, make that packaging smaller so that it's taking up less space in containers and it's easier for you to get it off the wall, you can keep it at a similar price point, even if some of the material should make it go a little bit higher.
Yes, but you have to build it yourself.
Yes.
Worst
part is you make... Oh, so obviously I missed one or two steps, which is why those slats kept falling out. I did not want to admit that. I tried to power through, which is always why I made an IKEA desk once where I was looking at the picture. Something didn't seem right, and I realized, oh, the drawers were supposed to be on the left side.
Oh, yeah. So he threw me out of my own backyard. Just threw me out. And then but did it, and it's beautiful. But again, fully built, it can't travel the way it travels when you build it. But I mean, I guess I could do this. I guess I could go to the internet and type in Handyman Services, Washington, D.C.
Yes.
Right? And I guess I could get a listing of people who, for a price, whatever that price is that they want to charge, would give me the option of paying that price and building this for me. Yes.
Yes. So, like,
more fun to watch.
Even if you go through IKEA, there are services that they will sync you up with who will come to your house to make this.
Right.
Throughout most neighborhoods, you'll see you see somebody with a van, and you inquire about what they help with, and then ideally you'd have a caretaker who helps with small projects. You don't necessarily need a full-scale plumber or carpenter, but it's just stuff around the house.
My job is the Sonny Corleone job. I throw money
right on the ground.
At the ground and say, okay, build it. Because I can't build it.
Right, but the hard thing for you is it's the vetting process of doing the research, which is why if you see somebody in the neighborhood, you sort of already think, well, I can ask my neighbor. They've had a good relationship with this with this group.
But I'm so impressed that you did that. Every time you build something, I'm
well. Let's see.
So
let's
impressed.
See what the yield looks like for the hot peppers, the habaneros, and the tomatoes.
Want peppers and tomatoes, and we want to find a way to at least convince the squirrels to have detente, to leave us alone.
Well,
I'll
rollers,
throw money at the squirrels.
I put roller skates on this planter, so it should be. Move it around.
My great joy, and this was great joy. Wilbon doesn't want to hear this later in the show. Joel Embiid stunk. The yappy Joel Embiid stunk. 5 of 18 from the floor, 15 points, 8 rebounds in a game 7. This is John Wall land.
Yeah.
You're the MVP. You're the MVP. Nothing. You and Harden. Harden, 3 of 11.
Oh, yeah, he was terrible.
9 points. They stunk. And I have to listen to Mike tell me all the time how great Joel Embiid is. And this is Joel Embiid is now 0-3 in game 7s to get to the championship round. The conference championship.
Yeah.
If that's not an indictment against him, what is? He's got a good team. This isn't just him.
Team. No, it is a good, very good
they
team.
They got a good team. They finished right behind Boston. They didn't finish 8th. They didn't finish 12th. This isn't like Miami had to go to the play-in. Lakers had to go to the play. It's not like that. This was 2-3. And once Milwaukee went out, Embiid's eyes lit up.
Yeah.
And he started yapping even more. Now he's sitting. All right?
It's so all about the process.
That makes me happy.
Yes, it does.
And I, of course, talking about the process, I communicated with the world's greatest, trust the process fan, Pablo. I said, what do you think of your boys now? And he stink. And he just wrote back, ha, 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 ha. Yeah, because he knows how I feel about this. All right, we'll take a break, and the previously mentioned Michael Wilbon will join us, maybe to defend Embiid, and he's going to say Embiid was hurt. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it. It's always an excuse for Embiid. Is it just an excuse? The guy's the MVP. He was hurt during the year, too. He was the MVP. You voted for him. Ha. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
In celebration of opening day, we've got a special episode of the Moth Podcast for you. The theme is baseball and the surprising ways it connects people.
I gaze out at the players on the field, and then I look over at my dad, and I realize that in the silence between us that something has changed. It's like I'm seeing him for the first time.
Two stories about baseball, family, and so much more. The episode's available right now. Subscribe to the Moth Podcast to make sure you hear it.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Caroline Muir, native Washingtonian, singer-songwriter based in Nashville. This is her first single, Follow Me. It's on all streaming platforms. Captures my love of the country music I grew up with, listening with modern pop and rock elements. I'd love if you played on your show. Help me reach more people with my music. Do you know how good this girl is? Are you kidding me?
Amazing.
Caroline Muir. Are you seriously? Wow. Caroline Muir. It's called Follow Me. It plays in Michael Wilbon. I'm going to get to Joel Embiid, as you well know. And I answered your question this morning about teammates that he was critical of. But to me, and I mean, this is my newspaper training. To me, the first story you have to talk about today is John Morant.
Yeah.
I mean, there's another gun video, which means that everything he said about taking responsibility, about going to counseling, about understanding his role, it's all nonsense now, is it not?
Yeah. Yeah, Tony. I mean, I certainly didn't believe a word of it when he was saying it. I just didn't. It didn't seem like in the few hours that he was away in Florida at some, you know, rehab place, that he had come to grips with this, that he even had any sense that anybody else was right and he wasn't. And so, you know, again, the part of this to me is the way it's played out. That John Morant, people don't know John Morant in his childhood. And John Morant didn't grow up, you know, some sort of, you know, thug, some sort of gangster. This is a role that he is attracted to, and he's playing out on Instagram, either his own account or his one of his best boys. And he doesn't care about it. It's like you bother me. What are you doing? You're bothering my fun. You're in my way. Commish. Yeah, nice. Sure. Yeah, I came to New York to talk to you. Can you not bother me again? He doesn't care. He doesn't even care about the hundreds of millions of dollars.
He's losing. Yes.
And he's losing.
Yes.
So I'm not going to say he's dumb, because he's not. He's a fool. And this is where we are with him. And, you know, he has to be, I mean, the suspension to me would be indefinite. It's like, you'll come back when I say you can come back. And that may not be even next season.
I fully agree with this. I wrote down, Memphis has suspended him, but there's no sense of what they've suspended him from. To me, you don't play at the start of the season. I know that's months away.
Yeah.
You don't play at the start of the season. And by the way, do you think, and I'm asking you this, do you think Silver should step in? I mean, if you're a commissioner, you can't have somebody do this time and again.
Well, they stepped in before because they suspended him for
eight games.
Yeah. And this has to, again, this should be indefinite. This should not be tied to a number of games. This should be tied to, you're not hearing me.
Yes.
You're not hearing me, dude. And so now you're going away. And we are going to prescribe the process by which you at least look at your own life and the idiot things that you're doing.
It was a stunner to me because I believed him. I believed him when he came back. Not only did I believe him when he came back, I believed him when he said after the series that they lost, this is pretty much on me because I caused the distraction. That's not going to happen again. Really? It happened in 2 weeks.
He doesn't care.
Wow.
And so I didn't believe him. And I told you, Tony, including yesterday when we were doing the show, and this came up on Countdown, I was talking to a person who has been involved in security and law enforcement for decades, both for a certain organization which has letters we all know, but then at the highest levels of basketball and other sports. And he said to me before we went on the air, he said, until John Morant changes the entire group of people that he is with, I'm quoting now, this is going to be the norm.
Well,
okay? So the person I was talking to not only wasn't surprised, the person I was talking to thought that the whole thing of going to Florida was fraudulent at the time. I told you that. I told you there are people who knew about this and thought, what? So John Morant is, you know, Tony, there was concern about gang signals. There were concern about other people from the Memphis organization from days gone by having to come in and soothe some tension, because Memphis ain't a place where you play around. Memphis ain't that place. If you're involved with some bad characters in Memphis and you think like you're the bad dude, that it can be taught to you very quickly that you're not.
He's a great, great player, and it's a story that everybody liked because he didn't go to a big school, and he came in and he lit it up, and his actions, which were detailed in the Washington Post, which is why I felt this way. Nobody else seemed to care about this stuff, but those reporters were right.
Yeah.
They're right.
Yeah, well, nobody was doubting them. The reporting was on the money. It was as thorough as you get.
Yes.
But he I can't just say he's not paying attention, because I don't think that part is true. He doesn't. Can't even give a damn about the reporting or what people think or what they said. Or when you do it again, okay, it wasn't his account this time. So what?
Bad. All right, I'm moving on. I'm getting to Embiid, and I'm getting to Harden. And I'm getting a Doc. Embiid, 5 of 18, 15 points in a Game 7, 8 rebounds. He's the MVP of the league. Harden, 3 of 11 in a Game 7. Not his first rodeo in a Game 7 to be a dog. 9 points, former MVP of the league. Glenn Doc Rivers, your friend. A wonderful person. Championship coach in Boston. Now 0-10 in the last 10 games to advance to the conference finals.
Yeah. I mean, Tony, it's a failure. I mean, Philadelphia, the process and everything they've done since Embiid, Harden, all of it has just been a failure. In a place where failure is met with the opposite of approval in a way that, you know, cost you your job, cost you your standing. Embiid, it's not about what anybody individually thinks. Embiid was just voted, and by a pretty, you know, decent margin.
Yes, it was.
Who the competition
was. Yes, it was.
Antetokounmpo and Joker, the league's MVP. I'm one of many who thought he had earned that. He wasn't given it to him. He earned it. But what now? Like, where do you go? Like, I can't imagine Harden. You can't even Harden any money. You can't do it.
No.
Now, I know he's got $37 million he can opt into, and so you could get stuck, but you could move him. But, Harden was so bad again. And I've seen Harden be bad, and I've covered this entire generation of bat playoff basketball. I've been sitting courtside when Harden had been just as stinky in other places. When he was the MVP, and Tony, not everybody wins. We can sit here with our list of great players and coaches who never won. Never. I mean, I'm glad Doc has the championship he has. I mean, Jerry Sloan never had one. people think Jerry Sloan was a great coach.
33-10 in the third quarter.
They were not even talking about the game. The game is irrelevant at this point. The discussion about the Sixers starts with what do you do? What do you do now? Who is this going to cost? And how quickly? And where do they go from here? All of that is at play. I thought Boston would win game. Look, I picked at the beginning of the year, I picked Philadelphia to go to the conference final. So when they went to game six at home, I thought, wow, I could look pretty good on this one because everybody had Milwaukee, Boston. I had Philly. And, you know, they couldn't hold the lead. They played well. They got in front of the Celtics in Boston. And then, of course, Jason Tatum had just the game of his life. And, you know, Tony, the Celtics seem to me to be sort of flawed. Their coach doesn't want to play a defensive lineup that got to a championship round for the previous coach, his boss, then. And it's great, the Marcus Smart quote. Are you familiar with the Marcus Smart quote?
I am not.
So Smart, who, you know, is one of the, I don't know, five best and most important people to talk to in the league after a game, Marcus Smart said, yeah, we should have started this lineup a long time ago. And I love Coach. He's getting ripped, as well he should be. It's like, and as Frank and I talked about this the other day, it's like, yes, he should be. Because this lineup's been available to play all playoffs, he hadn't done it because he don't want to. Because he doesn't believe in what was being done before. And the players on the Celtics roster have gone to him and said, hey, listen, we got this guy, Rob Williams. Perhaps you've seen him.
He's a tough guy. Locker room. He's a tough kid.
Yeah.
He's a tough kid.
Put him on the court with Al Horford and play the two of them. And not everything is about small ball. And let's go. And so he finally, down 3-2, facing elimination, and what surely would have been his own firing, put that lineup on the floor. So it's been a series with plenty of storylines. The first one, as you said, is it's a mix, a cocktail of Embiid, Harden, and Doc.
Yeah, you now have conference finals where two teams that had to go through the play-in are in them.
Yeah,
good for them, Miami and the Lakers, but reasonable people would make the other teams favorites. Denver was first all year. Boston was first or second all year. Mm-hmm. They are the obvious favorites. If I don't see them losing. Do you? I don't.
Oh, sure. I can see either one of them losing.
Really?
Yeah.
Which one do you see more likely to lose?
More likely Denver. But yes, they're both the favorites. If you ask me right now who am I picking to be in the finals, I'm going to tell you Denver and Boston.
Yes. Sure.
But yeah, I can see them losing. Tony, the glory of this season for the NBA is that, and this was apparent from day one, you had five teams at least in each conference that could win the championship. That's never happened before. Never. Ever. League's been around since 1948 or 47, whatever. Never happened. And so that's the cool thing, because that's the frenetic, storyline about the – when we got through the All-Star break, which is now at the three-quarter mark, there were only 22, 23 games left. And people like the Lakers have been playing in the playoffs ever since the end of February, because there's that many good teams. There's that many great young players. People have no idea how great Nikola Jokic is. They have no idea. You don't find out how great Nikola Jokic is because you watch SportsCenter. Either you don't. Nikola Jokic, Tony, he's going to meet, the great thing about this series is he's going to go up against the best defensive player in basketball this season, Anthony Davis. Because whatever people want to get on Anthony Davis about not being out there, when he's out there, he's the best defensive player in the league. Because he can go out and challenge Steph Curry and not be embarrassed and make him miss shots and then get back and play the likes of Nikola Jokic. Jokic is like, Tony, Shaq, who could bull and bully his way to a million points and was a dominant figure and sort of the first of his kind, you know, in some ways since Wilt. Nikola Jokic has 100 moves more than Shaq ever had. And sometimes you see them in like a quarter, and you're like, are you kidding me? And so the cool thing for me all winter has been, and being out here in Arizona where I've watched, the Western Conference is not late. It's, you know, 8 o'clock when I'm watching Nikola Jokic. Is that other people I'm watching with, and Tony, including lifelong basketball people, they marvel at him, his footwork, his dexterity, the fact that he cannot even jump on a curb, and he will kill you. He will embarrass you. He does, routinely. People don't know him. And so they go, hey, you know, Denver, yeah, sure, because they're not the Lakers and the Celtics, because that's what particularly Eastern people think about certain matchups. They know the Lakers, and so that's familiar to them. They know all the teams in the East because they see them, and that's very familiar to them. There's a lot of teams that can play, man. The Sacramento Kings could play. All season they could play.
Well, we're going to get to see it. We're going to get to see Jokic. And, you know, we're going to get to see Jimmy Butler. I don't think either of those. I don't think the Lakers will win, and I don't think Miami will win. But at least we're down to where we understand the movement towards the finals now. So, anyway,
I don't think they'll win, Tony. But I mean, Jimmy Butler has been doing this. he got Miami to the finals against the Lakers in the bubble.
He did.
He's last year. Just remind people now.
He's a great playoff player.
Yeah.
On a team that I think is sort of crippled. I mean, they're missing two very important people, and Boston is healthy.
He's local.
Yeah, Boston's
healthy. What he's done with his life, Victor Oladipo is just an exemplary person.
He's a good singer, too.
But Tony, yes, he is, by the way, yes.
He's a good singer.
But Tony, they're not, they still got, you know, a lot. They got Kevin Love, who's wearing
no. They're a nice team. I just think this is. I think this is the end of the line for them.
Probably,
they're a nice team.
I think so. But I tell you what, if you're Miami, don't you think you just played these people to a draw last year?
Yeah, you can sell that. You can sell that to your team. You can. All right, I'll talk to you later.
All right, Tony.
Michael Wilbon, boys and girls. We'll come back with Bob Ryan. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss, 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This comes from Maximilian, full name George Maximilian Duchow. Thank you for the opportunity of possibly having my song Rocker from a redneck town being played on your show. I appreciate it. Most of his life was spent in the village of Potter, Wisconsin, also spent a year in Pittsburgh, visited his German grandparents and relatives in Berlin many times through the decades. He resided in Araçatuba in Sao Paulo in Brazil since 2006. His cousin Lawrence was a nationally well-known polka band leader in the 40s and 50s. Wow, that's so cool. That's cool. This is called Rocker from a Redneck Town. You can find Maximilian's work all over the place. He's got an album out, too. Good for him. Michael, if people like Maximilian want to send us their original music, play how they do it.
Send us your music by emailing it to jingles@tonykornheisershow.com.
And he plays in the quintessential American sports writer, Bob Ryan. And we need to talk about the Celtics, and we need to talk about the Bruins, and we need to talk about the effect on the city of Boston. The Celtics won 2 games in a row facing elimination, beat their old coach in doing so. Doc Rivers, who I know is a friend of yours, has now lost 10 consecutive games when he had a chance to advance to the conference finals. He's got a ring, but I don't think he's going to have a job much longer. Do you, Bob?
Well, that depends, obviously, on the whim of the owner. I don't. Doc's very, very realistic. He said it so yesterday.
Yeah.
He knows the drill. He knows that nobody's safe, as he put it, even with the two years left on his contract. It would be certainly not surprising if he is swept out as a punishment. And, you know, the record is grim. I hate to say, you can't refute the numbers and the fact that these games have not been won, and he's been the coach. How much you blame a coach in these circumstances and how much you credit them if it goes the other way, we can have that debate forever. I watched two players that were great players, one of whom is at 35 years old, completely underperform in the biggest game of the year. And that was that Doc's fault? I rather think not, any more than it was Joe Mazzulla's credit that Jason Tatum played, you know, the game that one of the great games in playoff history, certainly in Celtic playoff history. But yeah, there's going to be turmoil in Philadelphia because, you know, the process, quote unquote, the famous process, did not result in true success. We know that.
So you and I, you much more so than I, but we have watched in our lives, we have watched great players rise to occasions and great players fall from greatness in certain occasions. James Harden, who I think is a great player, who had 45 and 42 earlier in this series and won games by himself, basically. James Harden, we have seen on the ground looking for his mouthpiece in playoffs. Chris Paul, we have seen injured and on the ground looking for his mouthpiece in playoffs. Do you know why this happened? These are great players. Do you know why this happens? Do you have any theories?
No, it's difficult. It's a very interesting circumstance, particularly in Harden's case. A one-time MVP, a guy who did win two games with 40-point performances, won games with last-second shots, and then looked utterly pathetic and decrepit and old and useless yesterday. And it was all or nothing in this series for him. This is the third bad game out of the seven, and it was atrocious. I don't have an answer. The Chris Paul thing. One thing is that. Too much burden is placed on a guy 6 feet tall. There's only so much he can do. And it was the same thing with Isaiah Thomas. He had his great moments. It took a while to figure out how to make use of his talent. Really, it did. Paul, 18 years now in the league, he is what he is. He's a very talented, going to the Hall of Fame, 6 foot point guard, and there's only so much he can accomplish. And I don't think that he didn't win a championship. He was never the best, the best player on a team that could win a championship. Though, you know, he's going to go to the Hall of Fame with his lengthy career accomplishment. But answer your question, you don't have an answer. You don't have an answer why Tatum, after these three atrocious starts that he had in the games, pulled himself together yesterday and had that magnificent game right from the start.
I'll go to Embiid. It was never my choice for MVP, regular season award. I would have given it to Antetokounmpo over Embiid. I think Embiid is yappy. I'm tired of him putting his hands up and asking the crowd of Philadelphia to applaud him all the time and then never, ever, ever gets to a conference final. And this is eight rebounds and 5 of 18 shooting in a game 7. What are we talking about here, right?
I looked up at one point relatively late in the game, and he had one rebound in the third quarter. And I thought, what is this? That sort of jumped out at me. I did, in fact, advocate for him to be the MVP, where I a voter. I would have voted for him. I stated so publicly. So that's okay. There were three great candidates. He was one of them, and he happened to win. That's the way I look at it. And it is based on regular season, and he carried that team a long, long way in the regular season. They didn't have much depth tone. They really didn't, and he was disproportionately important to that team. So, okay, that's another one. But he clearly was underwhelming yesterday. Now, I note that you did. Now, I'm sitting up in the upper reaches of the Garden press box yesterday, way above the action, and I have no audio. I have no nothing. All I know is what I can see from up there in the heavens. But there was a play in the second period. I think he got fouled, and he was hurt. That knee acted up on him. I will give him the benefit of that doubt. In fact, I might go so far as to say he performed better than you'd expect based on what he may have been dealing with the entire playoffs, the entire series. So I'm inclined to give him a little bit of slack in that regard, and think it would have been, things might have been different if he had been fully healthy. But he did block some, you know, when they were still in the game, remember they were up by nine twice.
Yeah.
And he was blocking shots and deterring. I'm thinking, God, Tatum can't get to the rim because this guy won't let him. You know? I mean, but in the end, we know that third quarter was catastrophic for the 76ers.
33-10 in a game
33-10. I remember looking up when it was 25-6, thinking, my God, they may hold him to single figures. Now, of course, this being Boston, Tony, I must point out, we've seen it before. In 1986, the Celtics went out in Game 6 against a clinching game against the Hawks with a 36-6 third quarter. I'll never forget that one. So we've seen everything in Boston, but this was right up there. There's no doubt. Let me just point this out too. Everybody's talking about the offense, and Tatum had the great offensive game. The defense was the difference in the third quarter.
Absolutely.
There were some, I would say, three or somewhere between three and six of the ugliest possessions an NBA team could possibly have. At any point in any season, at any point, including exhibition games, you can't look worse than the Sixers did on those particular possessions in the third quarter. Now, was that 100% because the Celtics made them look bad? Well, it's always a combination. I'll say it was probably 80-20. Celtics absolutely devastated them in the third quarter on defense and then happened to make some shots to make it, you know, to fulfill it.
The Celtics, we'll wrap up the Celtics after this. The Celtics now walk in to play Miami. Miami is a very good team, but they're also a team that had to go through the play-in in order to get in to the playoffs, just like the Lakers did on the other side. The Celtics will be the clear favorites here, but the Celtics are also a team that, my God, they just put together two good games in a row, but they haven't done that all playoff season. They haven't. So.
No, they haven't, and I keep saying it. I don't trust them, and I still don't trust them until they do it. And I mean it. They got to win the whole thing with this talent because they do. I'll repeat this. I told you last time. I'll tell everybody. They do not need any infusion of talent. They have sufficient basketball talent to win a championship. They simply need to play right, and they are capable of doing it. And that's simply that. And so we'll see. I respect Miami. Everybody respects Spoelstra. Everybody respects Jimmy Butler when the playoffs start. Bam Adebayo has done very, very well against the Celtics over the years. The one big thing, they don't have Tyler Hero.
Yeah.
And that's a big loss. So I give them credit for going as far as they have. They do have a guy that could be a pseudo-hero, and that's Duncan Robinson, who was swept out of their rotation during the season, but has to start playing again now. And he's capable of getting hot, but I wouldn't just keep your eye on that. That could happen. But you gotta like the Celtics in this series with the home, although the home hasn't been invincible, that's for sure. It's in there. I said this after they won Game 6. They're the one team that's left that you can truthfully say their destiny is in their hands. If everybody plays their A game, they win, period.
Okay. Let me shift to the Bruins. Had the greatest year of any hockey team of all time. Didn't get to the second round of the playoffs. I assume that the Celtics win yesterday has calmed the waters in the city of Boston. But how are the Bruins? How's the city dealing with the Bruins? How are the Bruins dealing with the Bruins?
No, they were licking a wound and feeling pretty sorry for themselves, and the coach is actually got people concerned a little bit because Jim Montgomery talked about the playoffs as a different animal, as if he were learning about it, and he's 50 some years old and has been through it before. This isn't Joe Mazzulla, who is going through it for the first time and is learning on the job about what playoffs are all about. Jim Montgomery supposedly already knew, and then he said some things that got people a little nervous. He juggled lines. He did things that people were questioning at the time. Now, they entered the playoffs with their first two centers injured and did not have them in the beginning, and, of course, that being Patrice Bergeron and Dave Krejci. We'll never know to what extent they were playing impaired. You know, how recovered did they really become? And when they did start playing, we'll never know. The goalie who is going to win the Vezina, there won't be any question about that, deteriorated. He let him down. There's no doubt. Linus Omark was not the same. And if there's one thing that we can always say that never changes in American sport is that when playoffs come, the most important position in American sport is goalie.
Yeah.
And North American sport and European sport is goalie. And when your goalie didn't play the way he had played all year, it hurt them. So they lost to the Panthers. And now the Panthers have knocked off two original six teams.
Yeah.
And suddenly they're a hot team. In hockey, there's lots of history of teams just like the Panthers going a long way.
So it leads to this question. You've asked yourself this. You've been asked this a million times. Why is a Stanley Cup so hard to win? It's harder than the others. It's harder.
You know, that's a great question. You got to win next series. Because in the old days, in the 16th league, you only had to win two series. Mm-hmm. But anyway, maybe there's a essential parity in the league more than we realize. I don't know. I'm not enough of a hockey maven to know to be able to articulate what technical differences there are in the playoffs that may favor some teams who are in that shorter period of time than over the long haul, because we know I can talk about baseball in those terms. I can talk about basketball in those terms. I don't think it applies to football, frankly, but I do think it applies. Something applies to hockey that doesn't apply in the other series, the other sports.
I completely agree with that. If you look at the history of teams winning championships in baseball and basketball, the best team wins often. And we don't necessarily see that in hockey, right? We don't.
Yeah, no, not in the same way. And so, I don't know, it's interesting, but it makes it, and it is compelling. And, of course, I will always say that as much as I'm a lifelong baseball and basketball guy, there is the greatest tension in sport that we have is hockey overtime in the playoffs. Stanley Cup hockey overtime is the tension of all mother of all tensions. There's nothing quite equates to it because it can change in an instant, and one quick turnover, bang, it's over. It's really tense stuff, and it's very exciting.
Great to watch too. Thank you, Bobby.
Okay, Tony. Anytime.
Bye-bye. Bob Ryan, boys and girls, it's fabulous. We'll take a break. We come back with email and jingle. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
I'm Mark Chapman. Welcome to the Planet Premier League podcast. Each week, Cesc Fabregas, Nader Manua and myself talk all things Premier League.
As a player, you don't have time to talk.
No.
You don't have time to make a plan. You just need to deal with wave after wave after wave.
We watched Coach Carter and he said, afterwards, the game's just about doing this for your teammates. And I remember looking around halfway through the film and half the squad was asleep.
Planet Premier League. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Here comes Tony. Tony's mailbag. Got your emails, faxes, and your notes.
Here comes Tony.
Here comes Mr. Tony's mailbag. Gonna read some for all of you.
Wow. That's sent in by Claudius West, who writes, attaches the jingle for the woman that I was once related to by marriage named Annie Kress. Wow.
That's amazing.
Wow.
Really?
That's a wow.
Spectacular.
Wow. Thank you, Claudius.
A lot of indigo girls in her phrase.
Thank you, Annie.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. You want to do the Bethesda Bagel ad?
Yes, we got the bagel sandwiches today. Very excited about that. Bethesda Bagels, we love them. You will as well. Just go to BethesdaBagels.com. Find a location in the D.C. area nearest you. Then pop on in and you will be thrilled.
Before we get to the mailbag, in honor of the Hewlett High School weekend, over the weekend, let me just say turn around. Every now and then I get a little bit lonely and you're never coming around. Turn around. Every now and then I get a little bit tired of listening to the sound of my tears. Turn around. Every now and then I get a little bit nervous that the best of all the years have gone by. Turn around. Every now and then I get a little bit terrified and then I see the look in your eyes. Turn around, bright eyes. That's Jimmy Steinman's great writing. Mm. Hewlett High School. Who's
in charge of the jukebox?
Oh, great question.
We didn't have any music. We're so old. We just talked. We just talked. That was it. And it was great. We just chatted. Thanks to our guest today. Did you think we would have music?
I just thought there'd be a background
Beach
music.
Boys.
Yeah. Get home from golf.
I don't even have a record player or a music machine. I need a handyman. I'm your handyman. I'm not the kind to use a pencil or rule.
Right. See, these songs would be great
with
for
love
you to play.
And I'm no fool. I fix broken hearts. You know I really can. Thanks to our guests today, Michael Wilbon and Bob Ryan. Thanks to today's sponsors, Indochino, Grammarly, ZipRecruiter. Remember, you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and Odyssey. And if you get the show through Apple Podcasts, please leave us a review. It's terrifying. I can do these songs. It's just terrifying. They come into my head and I know the lyrics.
All of them.
Most of the lyrics.
Yeah.
From Francisco DeFalco in Alexandria, Virginia, Trader Joe parking lots are designed for smaller vehicles, like Subarus. From Bill Gardner in North Potomac, Maryland, my wife loves the Trader Joe's in Travel or Trayville Square. I rant about the parking lot all the time and refuse to buy anything in that shopping center. My wife's car has little dings everywhere. Sons of bitches. From Matt Strain, yesterday I was talking with my 84-year-old mom, Susan Strain, who suffers from Parkinson. Out of nowhere, she said, if it wasn't for the Tony Kornheiser show, I wouldn't be here. No pressure, but thank you. I like my mom. Appreciate you giving her a reason to stick around. From Gus Carianis
in bus, Gus.
South Glens Falls, New York. My original roommate in college, Dave Carpenter, was from Glens Falls, New York. I have pileated woodpeckers nesting near my house every year. And when the young leave the nest, provided the northern goshawk doesn't kill them, they are incredibly vocal. Here's an interesting little bit of trivia for you. Walter Lantz used to use both the look and call of the pileated when he created Woody Woodpecker. Listen to the call on your Google machine and you'll recognize a ha-ha-ha-ha-ha sound for sure. I usually left my name last name off as you suffered so much trying to pronounce it, but it's Carianis. And yes, like most Greek immigrants, my grandfather operated a few restaurants in New York City and my aunt's brother owned a little rib joint in Memphis called the Rendezvous. Okay. The Rendezvous is the best ribs in the world.
Yeah.
Not just the best in Memphis, not just the best in Tennessee, not just the best in the southern part of the United States, the best in the world, the Rendezvous. I think that Jesse McCollum is friendly with that family. Carianis.
And you like them unsauced?
I do.
Dry.
I like them dry, and when I want to add sauce, I do. I don't like them to come that way. If you ever get a chance to go to, you know, to Memphis on the Rendezvous, do it. From Stephen Good in Fayetteville, Arkansas. Last weekend, I went to Cooperstown to see the Baseball Hall of Fame before going to New York City to see Citi Field and Yankee Stadium, knocking out the final two active stadiums on my list. I'm now 30 for 30. I stayed at the Otisaga, as you have recommended numerous times on the podcast. It was as you described and more, and there's one thing that really made the trip special. It was not completing the stadium checklist or going to the Hall of Fame. It was not the beauty of the lake, the great beer, or the good food. No, the trip was truly made when I opened up the armoire and found not one, but two fluffy white bathrobes. Thanks for the hotel recommendation. I don't know that anyone listens up there, but it's the best hotel I've ever been in. I know, we went year, right, Michael?
Yeah, we had a great vacation, a vacation that lasted a little bit longer for you with one phone call.
Oh, yeah. And that's a long time ago, and that's for another discussion. But that was almost the end of Tony. For Jeremy Salinger in Chicago, Illinois, first time, long time by millennial standards, though not by ESPN Radio Day standards. On the May 8th episode, you read a note by Stephen Salinger. I finally had my first David Aldridge. Hey, I know that guy. That guy's my dad. Stunned that my dad never told me he was a little. I played it again and then heard you add from Doylestown, Pennsylvania. My father is many things. Dentist, inventor, Volkswagen enthusiast. And now I add to that list, not that Stephen Salinger. Also, if you would be so kind, please give a shout out to Josh London in Chicago, who introduced me to the show many years ago and is getting married in September. So he thought it was his dad, but it wasn't his dad. From Patrick Sitter, our old friend in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. I like melons. Do I need to move on to a more melon-friendly podcast? Is it over between us? From Bob in D.C., please ask Dan Byrne to compose a song called The 14 Players Drafted Before Booger McFarland. The song actually writes itself. I don't think my life will be complete until I hear that song.
Challenge on, Dan.
Yeah, what else do we have here? A couple of others. Let's just do one or two more. From Fab Nicolau in Melbourne, Australia, we feel your red zone pain in Australia. Our Comcast equivalent, Foxtel, has ditched it as well. When you talk to Goodell and Comcast or whomever, see if you can put in a good word for us as well. Love the show. We're back.
Yes,
we have
solved.
It back. So I assume it should be back for anybody. From Stephen in Tampa Bay, there is a special place in hell for people who play golf slow. When I started to teach my daughter to play, she was about 9, the first few times on the course, what we focused on was how to play quick. Get to your ball, select a club, be ready to hit when it's your turn. As you walk up to the ball on the green, start looking at the slope and the contours so you don't have to spend much time reading the green when you get to the ball. And finally, at a certain point, just pick up your ball and head to the next green. I explained if you play quick, you can play with anyone, even those much better than yourself. The worst is to have others in your group constantly wait for you and or being the source of a backlog on the course. She's 26 now. She had a nice little high school golf career. We have a trophy for the winner of the annual Daddy-Daughter Classic, which at this time resides in my domicile. So if I owned a course, I would have a starter watch each group play the first hole. Based on this observation, the starter would tell them which set of tees they're going to have to play going forward. Lastly, I know you don't care, but the Tampa Bay Rays are having one of the best seasons in the history of baseball. Yeah. I wish they got more love nationally for what they're doing. We have them on PTI all the time. We talk about
sure.
them all the time.
And by the way, slow play is frowned upon everywhere except for Pebble Beach, right? Then it's understood.
It's understood.
Yeah.
Frowned
it's
upon,
understood.
But accepted.
But accepted, yeah. Okay, yeah.
From Ed Butt, the Village Links is a nice municipal golf course in Glen Ellen, Illinois. When I played it back in the 90s, they had a great solution for slow play. If your foursome finished within 15 minutes of the group in front of you, you got a free pitcher of beer. And it worked.
Seems nice.
Stephen Greenfield, Gaithersburg, Maryland. Years ago, I traveled to Costa Rica with my family. One day, we booked an excursion to go white water rafting. It's Costa Rica, I'm emphasizing. The rafting company picked us up in a van to go to the river. When we were picked up, there was a couple in the van. We introduced ourselves and started chatting. They mentioned they were from Dallas and their son was getting married in a couple of months and how happy they were about that. I told them I went to a summer camp with a family from Dallas. Where was the camp, they asked. In the mountains of North Carolina, I replied. Which camp, they asked. Blue Star, I replied. What was the family's name, they asked. Gerard, I replied, to which the husband responded, that's me and my brothers. What? He immediately pulled out his cell phone, called his younger brother, who was my bunkmate for years. So there I stood on the banks of a river in rural Costa Rica having a mini camp reunion, talking to my summer camp bunkmate who I hadn't seen in over 35 years. What?
That's what? Amazing.
From Robert in Honolulu. Now that you've caught up on all the old emails, when are you going to get to the faxes? I mentioned this the other day of Steve Spurrier Day, and I knew somebody else had put it in my head. It was Charlie Burtz in Springfield, Virginia. He said, good old 5-11 is a date that lives in the tradition of May the 4th be with you. I mean, it's not the worst day. It's better than some of them. So I guess that's something. From Dan in California, my birthday's coming up on May 11th. For most of my life, the only thing I associated with that date is my birthday. But ever since listening to the show, when my birthday comes around, all I can think of is 5-11. Not very good. From Ben Tiener, or Tiner, T-I-E-N-O-R, in Dallas, Texas. I'm at an event this month, and I've been asked for my walk-up music. Between rope and a yardstick, where I have a piano, which has the cheaper licensing fees. Wonderful. Wonderful. If you're out on your bike time, everyone, as always, do wear white.
But I still need a bit of milk, full fat, which I've warmed in the microwave.
Calling, I was going to Nashville. You never wanted a part of that life.
Rocker from a redneck town. Won't let these backwards settings keep me down. I'm just a rocker.